Ray Verner Parker, a very good morning and welcome to the programme.
Oh, good morning to you.
It's nice to talk to you this morning. Ray, we're talking about old Irish goats of all things, ahead of a talk that you're going to be giving in the Mulroney Amenity Centre this coming Friday night on old Irish goats. Within a couple of sentences, what are old Irish goats then, Ray?
Okay, yes. Well, very briefly, the old Irish goat is the Irish goat of history. It's the only breed that Ireland had from earliest times until British goats were imported towards the end of the Victorian period, which means around the beginning of the 20th century.
And what makes them uniquely Irish?
Uniquely Irish? Well, the fact that they are so wedded into the environment. They're what we technically call a landrace breed, which means that they were really shaped by and shaped for the landscape, and also for the way in which they were generally husbanded in prehistoric and forward times. They were not a specialist breed like milking. They were used for fat, for hair, for hide, skins, and also for their parchment, and also basically their horns. So every part of them was used at one time by the various peoples that came to an inhabited island.
I suppose they gave recycling, or this whole idea of being green, a whole new meaning.
Oh, absolutely, yes. They're one of the original breeds that was used for literally everything. And also, whenever a population fell on hard times and famine, it probably of all the other livestock will be the one that will be the difference between a community dying out, a community just barely surviving.
Yes. Now, to this day, goats, I suppose, have been maligned in many senses. We don't hear many farmers keeping goats. We don't hear anything about grants for breeding goats, etc., etc. Mm-hmm. I know you head up the British Feral Goat Group, which we'll talk to you about in a moment. But one of the things we hear to this day, Ray, is the importance of goat's milk, particularly for those who suffer from asthma.
Yes, that's very true. It was discovered that, particularly in Victorian times, that for people who had all forms of allergies, particularly for cow's milk, they were unaffected by goat's milk. It's highly nutritious and is very easy to produce, just in enough quantities to keep a family going. And somewhere around about the 1870s in England, it was realised that it was so important that it led to a goat movement where there was a revitalising of an interest in goats. And that led directly to the founding of the British Goat Society in 1879.
More importantly, you deal with the British feral goat end of things.
That's right, yes. In Wales and Scotland, England and Ireland, there are slightly different variants of what we call the old British primitive goat. The old Irish goat, as you know, is extremely rare and likely to become extinct. They're a little bit more common in Scotland, but they're endangered. Similarly in Wales, and in England, they're actually extinct in domestication, and probably the equivalent of the old Irish goat in England, called the old English goat, is probably down to just a few hundred.
Why, in your opinion, were they cast away from what we might call general farming?
Simply because, particularly in England, when the agricultural revolution took place,
yes,
there was an interest in developing breeds to a modern standard. Cattle were improved, sheep were improved, but the goat somehow escaped that. And part of the reason for that was with enclosure, when small farms were developed, there was lots of hedging and quite a number of trees planted. And of course, there was this sort of almost folklore attached to the idea that goats are damaging to trees and also hedgerows, and so they were not a popular animal. And also, interestingly, they were very difficult to confine. It's generally a herding animal that just does much better when it's out on the open landscape. When you try to confine them to standard fields, they're very liable to jump hedges, jump fields and so on. In fact, the record for a goat jumping a fence is 7 foot from a standing position.
It's funny you should say that, because near where I live, there's exactly what you say, a herd of feral goats. Only the other day I was out walking and I saw some of them, and it would amaze you where they were pinpointing and balancing themselves, literally up the side of a tree to get some of the succulent leaves.
Yes. Yes, well, the interesting thing about goats is that they have got a spectacular hoof. If you look closely, it's a divided hoof at the front, and then there's what's known as a dewclaw at the back. And that little tripartite system they have at the end of their leg enables them to do a variety of things. One is that it acts as a suction pad so that they don't fall when they lock themselves down. If they're going down a severe slope, they can actually use the dewclaw as a brake. And also it's so rubbery and spongy that they can hop very easily on very small areas. And in fact, there are stories about, for example, the old Achill Island feral goats, in Mayo that they were able to do incredible leaps and bounds and would come up almost sheer cliff faces. Just amazing people that saw them do it.
Now, there's a saying in these parts as well, it's a derogatory saying, that one would be as stink as an old puck goat. What makes an old puck goat so stink?
Basically, during the rutting season with the pucks, they try to make themselves as pungent as possible. So, not to be too delicate on the radio, what they actually do is they urinate over themselves.
My God.
To provide quite an attractive scent. Now, I mean, it's a matter of opinion, really. I mean, having worked with feral goats for years, I would like to bottle it and sell it, but as my wife is often telling me or has told me in the past, it's probably not going to sell at all.
So in many ways, what they're doing to themselves is what maybe a young might do as he goes out on a date with his beautiful intended girlfriend. He splashes on the best cologne he can find.
Well, that's something like that, yes. And of course, with the feral goat billies, or pucks as you call them in Ireland, the fact that they have this tremendously long coat does rather remind you of the time when sort of, you know, yes, you put cream on a sort of on longer hair and sort of try to make yourself attractive. Yes.
Now I see in the bump that I have in front of me that this population of old Irish goats that you talk about may be as low as somewhere between 200 and 250. Would you dispute or agree with those figures?
This is an interesting thing, is that I'm not in any position to dispute that or otherwise, because one of the problems we have is that there has been no all Ireland survey of feral herds generally, and particularly how many are old Irish, either in origin or largely made up of. So certainly what we found when our society looked at the Barron a couple of years ago, we've came to the conclusion that nearly all the herds had other breeds locked into them apart from the old Irish, but probably something like 10 to 15% were of old Irish type. And if that's a yardstick that's true all over Ireland, yes, the numbers are certainly very, very low.
And the old Irish type itself, then, what does it look like?
Right. Compared with modern goat stock, it's extremely small.
Yeah.
It's a very stocky animal. It's basically very wide as opposed to just sort of tall. It has rather short legs compared with its body depth. Has an incredibly thick and long coat. Has a rather delicate dish face. Has very, very small ears, which usually are upright, rather impressive horns, and it comes in quite a number of colours, so it's not just one colour, there's a variation in the colour. And one very important aspect of it is that it has a large amount of cashmere under the outer coat, so much so in the winter, in fact, that the outer coat sometimes almost sticks out sideways from the amount of cashmere that it has as an undercoat.
And finally, before I let you go, Ray, do you ever see the day when goats will become part of mainstream farming again, or would you like to see that day come about?
Well, I certainly would, because yes, I mean, in a sense, we can say genuinely that we have no idea where farming will go in the future.
Mm.
And that's a worldwide phenomenon, really. What we really know at the moment is that there is a reasonable amount of interest in smallholding, and people trying to be self-sufficient. There is a need to be very, very self-sufficient in relation to the cost of raising and keeping animals, and also the cost of production. One of the difficulties with modern goat breeds is what happens with them is that although they produce huge quantities of milk, in terms of vets bills and concentrates needed and housing and so on, it's not necessarily as cheap to produce per pint as you would think. Whereas with the old Irish goat, it was such a self-contained and hardy animal.
And so tough in their breed, yeah.
Milk, it was well able to produce it very, very efficiently. And maybe people want that in the future, along with less vet bills, because they're much hardier.
It's much very, very interesting stuff. You can be, you could listen to this all day. You'll be expounding on all of this and much more when you give your talk on the Mulrenny Old Irish Goats. It's in the Mulrenny Amenity Centre this coming Friday night, the 28th of January. It begins at 8:30, and all are welcome. In the meantime, Ray Verner Parker, thank you very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Good morning to you.